Hello and welcome to Right Through Now. Just trying to catch up with, you know, what's happening in the world, world events, interesting stuff that's been going on, to keep you in the know, as I like to say. Let's begin. Second World War bomb detonation damages buildings in Exeter. Yeah, a lot of people outside Europe tend to not realize that bombs from the World War II era are still being found. A lot of times these bombs were intended to be, you know, mass amounts of these bombs tend to be dropped on major cities and infrastructure because that was the point. They wanted to destroy infrastructure. And every once in a while during building construction and infrastructure upgrades and stuff like that, these bombs tend to get found again. And every once in a while, they actually detonate. I mean, think about the volatility of these chemicals that are inside these bombs. I mean, yeah, they get, because of the fact that they're encapsulated, they're still pretty dangerous. You know, the deterioration has not occurred to that extent that the bombs tend to be duds, you know, although probably a lot of them are. Structural damage has been caused to a number of properties in Exeter following the detonation of a Second World War bomb, police have said. The device, believed to be a one-ton Hermann bomb used by the Nazis, was discovered on a building site on private land to the west of the University of Exeter campus on Friday morning. A 100-meter cordon was erected initially, and this was extended to 400 meters on Saturday at the request of the Royal Navy Bomb Disposal Team. The controlled detonation of the device took place at 6:10 p.m. on Saturday, with the explosion heard for miles. About 400 tons of sand were transported to the site, and walls were erected by the Royal Navy Bomb Disposal experts and army personnel from the Royal Logistic Corps. A spokesperson for Devon and Cornwall Police said, however, unfortunately, structural damage has been caused to some buildings, primarily within the 100-meter cordon, including blown-out windows and cracks in brickwork. Yeah, the impact of the war still lingers on 100 years later. News from the Netherlands. COVID has, quote, taken the wind out of Dutch politics, end quote, analysts say as elections loom. Mark Rutte enters final leg of race in dominant position despite difficult phase of pandemic. Coronavirus has completely taken the wind out of Dutch politics, analysts have said, predicting little change in the makeup of the coalition government after March elections as the Prime Minister Mark Rutte begins cautiously easing restrictions. Despite 3 nights of rioting and 400 arrests after the nighttime curfew, the first since the Second World War, was imposed in January and one of Europe's slowest vaccine rollouts. Rutte enters the last 2 weeks of the election race in a dominant position. In more interesting news from the UK, a large meteor blazed across the UK skies on Sunday night, delighting those lucky enough to spot it. The meteor was spotted shortly before 10 p.m. and was visible for around 7 seconds. It was captured on doorbell cameras. Yeah, so, you know, chunks of matter is flying around in space all the time. And actually, a lot of this stuff gets burnt up when, you know, the Earth passes through the trajectory of whatever's going on or, you know, stuff that's lingering on. And most of it goes unnoticed. I mean, if you really spend some time observing the night sky, you will see tens of these. You know, you can, in the part of the Himalayas where I am from, you could very easily spot at least a couple for every hour that you spend looking up into the sky. And of course, that also, in the Himalayas, you're already at high altitude and stuff like that. But it's really interesting that you can also spot this stuff. I mean, it has to be large enough if you can spot this in a city, for instance. And the main reason for that is the brightness. Yeah, there's very different ratings for how visible a meteor is. And of course, you don't want the rating to be so high that it actually is no longer a meteor. In fact, it's a meteorite. The difference is when a piece of space debris enters the Earth, most of the times it burns up if it's small enough. And if it's large enough, it actually manages to, you know, even though a large chunk of it burns off, it tends, a small part of it still manages to reach the surface of the Earth, in which case it's called a meteorite. You know, they're usually the size of small pebbles, but occasionally they can be larger as well, in which case they tend to even cause damage. They can start fires and stuff like that. Okay, what else is up? Everyone is angry, Arden, under pressure over latest Auckland COVID lockdown. You know, New Zealand has been one country that has been ahead of the, you know, entire world politics game, especially when it comes to COVID stuff. I mean, they've managed to protect their borders remarkably well. And, you know, Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister for New Zealand, she has reprimanded rule breakers over the recent cluster of coronavirus cases, leading to further restrictions for Auckland. Supporters of detained Saudi princess call for UK to help secure release. Letters to Dominic Raab and Lady Scotland say Princess Basma requires urgent medical treatment. Supporters of a prominent Saudi Arabian princess detained with her daughter in Riyadh have appealed to the British government to help secure their release. Let's see what else is up. Australia News Live, AstraZeneca COVID vaccine to be tested ahead of rollout next week. Drug regulator to begin batch testing COVID-19 vaccine that arrived in Australia on Sunday. That's interesting. Okay, let's see what else is going on. Iran says it will not attend talks with US over nuclear deal. A new impasse has been reached as Tehran accuses Washington of not doing enough to lift sanctions against it. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has announced it is not willing to attend EU-brokered talks with the US over the future of the Iran nuclear deal because Washington has not done enough to lift sanctions. How harmful is bushfire smoke during pregnancy? During the black summer, bushfires Sonia gave birth 6 weeks early. Afterwards, when her doctor told her bushfire smoke may have had something to do with it, she was shocked. She had not been warned that this was possible. You know, this is another really interesting aspect of humanity because there are parts of the world, it's you know, almost hard to believe if you're not part of that conversation, but there are parts of the world where bushfires are just a common recurring occurrence year after year. And this is, of course, going to take a toll on the people who live around that place, around that region. And smoke, depending upon the components of whatever, you know, whatever's burning, can have severe long-term detrimental effects. And it's really, really bad for your health. But of course, you know, this is still relatively new stuff that if you're pregnant, that your child is in danger as well. All right, let's see what else is going on. Denmark's climate policy is insufficient to meet 2030 target. Report says country set to cut carbon emissions by 54% compared with 1990 levels, not 70% as planned. The Danish government's efforts towards meeting the country's ambitious target of reducing emissions by 70% by 2030 have been judged insufficient by the body tasked with measuring. Why Toronto is taking action against a carpenter amid its homelessness crisis. After a tragedy where a man was killed by a fire in a tiny home, the city has blamed the man who built the structures. For the thousands of homeless people who live in Toronto, winter represents the most challenging and dangerous season. Heavy snowfall crushes tents and cold rains leak through them, damaging belongings and soaking sleeping pads. When Khalil Saveright surveyed the city's housing crisis last autumn, he hoped that his background in carpentry could be of some help. Within weeks, his tiny wooden houses began appearing in city parks, The Guardian reports. You know, this is... homelessness is... it's just so mind-blowing that, you know, countries like, for instance, in this case, Canada, still have issues with homelessness where thousands of people are still homeless in major parts of the world. And, you know, it's, of course, it's kind of understandable when people fall out of luck in their lives, but... it was really shocking to me coming out of India to realize that homelessness exists as a real problem in the, so to speak, developed countries in the world as well. And, you know, this is, more has to be done, clearly. And, you know, if you have homelessness in countries like Canada still, which is, you know, a world leader when it comes to, you know, pioneering human rights, they're on the front edge of doing what's right and setting the record right for the entire world, then you know how big a problem it is worldwide. Okay, let's see what else is going on in science and technology. This is interesting. Amazon rainforest plots sold via Facebook marketplace ads. You just, you know, you think humanity can't sink lower, but it can. Parts of Brazil's Amazon rainforest are being illegally sold on Facebook, the BBC has discovered. The protected areas include national forests and land reserved for indigenous peoples. Some of the plots listed via Facebook's classified ad services are as large as 1,000 football pitches. Facebook said it was ready to work with local authorities, but indicated it would not take independent action of its own to halt the trade. The leader of one of the indigenous communities affected has urged the tech firm to do more. The land invaders feel very empowered to the point that they are not ashamed of going on Facebook to make illegal land deals, said Ivanit Bandira, head of environmental NGO Kaninde. Aberdeen physicist behind first full-body MRI scanner has passed away. Professor John Mallard, formerly of Aberdeen University, was known for his pioneering work in medical imaging. You know, innovations in medical technology benefit the entire world. And MRIs, or magnetic resonance imaging machines, they are so helpful in identifying so many different illnesses and sicknesses. It's just incredible. I mean, one of the key things about medical technologies, like all technologies, for instance, you know, they rely on developments in hundreds of different fields and by thousands of people. And then you can, you know, inch further a little bit. That's how difficult it is to innovate, especially in this sector. But it's really incredible that, you know, you have to be so aware of all of these different technologies and sciences, and then, you know, use your creativity in order to take, you know, one step further. And the MRI machine has just been so helpful to the entire world. This is a gentleman who requires recognition. Professor John Mallard notably led a team at the University of Aberdeen, which developed the first whole-body magnetic resonance imaging scanner. He also helped develop positron emission tomography, or PET scans, which can produce detailed three-dimensional images of the inside of the body. And, you know, PET scans are basically what help identify cancer spots. And he was appointed the university's first professor of medical physics in 1965. He was born in Northampton and published work in a journal in 1964 in his research, which indicated that magnetic resonance might be able to diagnose cancer. Rest in peace, good sir. Climate change, carbon emission promises put Earth on red alert. Nations' current carbon-cutting plans will not keep global temperature rise below 1.5 degrees Celsius, the United Nations has said. This is really the leading issue of our times. The world will heat by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius unless nations produce tougher policies, a global stocktake has confirmed. Governments must halve emissions by 2030 if they intend the Earth to stay within the 1.5 degrees Celsius safe threshold. But the latest set of national policies submitted to the UN shows emissions will merely be stabilized by 2030. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called it a red alert to our planet. He said, quote, "It shows governments are nowhere close to the level of ambition needed to limit climate change to 1.5 degrees and meet the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement." I think the whole world has to do much more if we want to really create a habitable environment for upcoming generations. Climate change is not just, you know, a lot of people confuse climate change with just a thorough increase in temperature year round. But it's, while parts of that are true, it is also the entire sort of dynamic range of weather that gets affected. What it means is that the entire weather patterns are more unpredictable and a little bit worse. So, for instance, if there is a storm, the intensity of the storms increases. The intensity of winter sometimes increases. The intensity of summer almost always seems to increase. So there is a lot going on, and the 1.5 degrees Celsius limit is, I think, one of the easiest ways to understand the effects of climate change. But there is a lot else going on. And it's not just the Earth is getting warmer. It's that all of these additional things, these weather patterns, weather incidents, we're going to see more of these incidents as well. So this is really in our best interest to take care of these laws, whether you are a believer in climate change, or, you know, whether you're convinced with the reality of what the scientists are telling you, or you're an asshole, it's still important that governments take note of this stuff. Cancer survivor joins first all-civilian space mission. The SpaceX mission will make Haley... Oh, fuck, I'm going to totally ruin her name. Haley I'm going to pronounce her name the best to my ability. Hayley Arsenox is the first person with a prosthesis to visit space. The first bone cancer survivor to become an astronaut. The first person with a prosthetic body part to visit space. And the youngest American ever to orbit Earth. These are the impressive firsts that could soon be attributable to 29-year-old Hayley Arsenox. In January, the physician assistant was picked to join the crew of the world's first all-civilian space mission. She was ecstatic, but at first, she had to keep her lips sealed. I've held on to the biggest secret of my life for a month and a half, so now I get to share it with the world, end quote, she told the BBC. That is really encouraging, and again, this is something that affects the entire world. Because sooner or later, you know, as Elon Musk likes to put it, you either become an interplanetary species or you perish. And I tend to agree with him. Let's see, what else is going on? Okay, this is interesting. The COVID Zoom boom is reshaping sign language. Deaf people are adapting signs to accommodate the limitations of video communication while working from home. I mean, yeah, this is another really key area that I feel tends to not receive enough attention. Because, yeah, we're all suffering from the impacts of, you know, not being able to be full-time working from our office locations or whatever. But at the same time, there are people with disabilities or issues of any kind. And they're the ones who are really the most hit with, you know, having to deal with the circumstances that all of us, we have, you know, most of us have technologies that help us to sort these issues out. And of course, you know, we all have to adapt in some way, but those who have any disability or you know, any issue that prevents them from being able to fluidly use audio-video technologies, it's just really incredible how they are adapting to these circumstances and still, you know, taking part in society. It's really appreciable. Like, people who use American Sign Language to communicate are no strangers to video chatting. The technology, which has been around since 1927, when AT&T experimented with the first rudimentary video phones, allows deaf people to converse with signs over the airwaves. But after the coronavirus pandemic began, confining people to their homes early last year, the use of platforms such as Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and Google Meet exploded. This increased reliance on video conferencing has inevitably transformed the way that deaf people communicate. One adaptation arises as a result of a video meeting's limited frame size. The signing space is expansive, says Michael Skyer, a senior executive of deaf education at the Rochester Institute of Technology. Even if many signs are produced easily or normally in the Zoom screen dimensions, many are not. The sign for body, for example, is usually produced by making a B hand shape and moving it from the shoulders to the hips. But to fit the reduced signing space demanded by video conferencing, many signers have been ending it at the chest. Let's see what else is up. Massive Google-funded COVID database will track variants and immunity. So an open repository will give free access to more than 160 million data points with details about individual infections. Okay, let's see. An enormous international database launched today will help epidemiologists to answer burning questions about the coronavirus SARS-CoV-2, such as how rapidly the new variants spread among people, whether vaccines protect against them, and how long immunity to COVID-19 lasts. Individual level data like these provide the clues that epidemiologists need to determine how diseases are spreading, says Caitlin Rivers, an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins, who is part of the project. By the time we understand the gravity of an outbreak, it's often too late. Data can close that loop and make the process faster. I mean, yes, there is a privacy dimension to this question about how we can use our data to then, you know, develop information about how viruses are spreading, how any disease is spreading, more or less. But it's really interesting that so much of this data is basically trapped in privacy laws. And to be fair, a lot of it is rightly protected. In the EU, where the privacy laws are the most stringent, there was still a lot of adaptations of, you know, the COVID app that basically uses Bluetooth to perform contact tracing, and but there are always, you know, issues and concerns over the privacy aspect of, you know, how your data gets used and who uses that data, of course. But I guess this is, generally speaking, this seems to be a step in the right direction. I mean, we have this data. We might as well use it to save our species. In other news, microscopic wrinkles in leaves ward off insects. Yeah, I mean, very often we tend to think of ourselves as, you know, the showrunners of the world. But a lot of the underlying stuff happens at a level that we have learned to sort of ignore. But that does not make it go away. And this is an effort in analyzing that world. Plants have evolved an impressive range of strategies to ward off hungry, leaf-chomping insects. Well-known defenses include foul-tasting toxins, sticky raisins, and sharp thorns. And now scientists have identified yet another example, microscopic wrinkles that make leaves harder to walk on. Wrinkles form in many leaves' cuticles, coatings that limit water evaporation, mediate gas exchange, and protect the plant from pathogens. The new research published in Royal Society Open Science finds that along with the cuticle's inherently slippery surface, its tiny wrinkles also help discourage insects. The wrinkles will most likely become more pronounced as the leaf matures and its cuticle builds up, eventually expanding and buckling. Just one of the ways in which plants try to defend themselves from invading insect colonies. Information from Australia again. Oldest rock art is 17,300-year-old kangaroo. Scientists determining the painting's age by examining ancient wasp nets around the artwork. That's interesting. Let's read more. This is an article from the BBC. The artwork measuring 2 meters was painted in red ochre on the ceiling of a rock shelter. It was found in Western Australia's Kimberley region, known for its Aboriginal rock paintings. Its age was determined by radiocarbon dating ancient mud wasp nets. Researcher Damien Finch, who pioneered the mud wasp dating technique, said it was rare to find mud wasp nets both on top and underneath a single artwork. But the team was able to sample both types to establish the artwork's minimum and maximum ages. Let's read a quote directly from them. We radiocarbon dated 3 wasp nests underlying the painting and 3 nests built over it to determine confidently that the painting is between 17,500 and 17,100 years old, most likely 17,300 years old, said Dr. Finch, a geochronologist from the University of Melbourne. This has got to be, I think, one of the coolest jobs in the world, where you're looking into, you know, the chapters of human history. Really, really cool. Let's see what's up in technology. 2021 Golden Globes. Netflix dominates the night. Nomadland takes top honor. In other news, Lime says it will spend $50 million on a huge e-bike expansion, which is really cool. And cybersecurity firm says social media bots hyped GameStop during trading frenzy. Some more headlines. Minneapolis hiring social media influencers for former police officers' trials. Wow. This is something that is... sounds a little shady. I have to take a look. All right, let's see. George Floyd died in police custody in May 2020. Minneapolis is hiring social media influencers to share city-generated and approved messages during the trials of 4 former city police officers charged in the May 2020 killing of George Floyd, according to the Minnesota Reformer. The council approved the plan on Friday, which calls for 6 influencers to be paid about $2,000 each to spread the city's message with Black, Native American, Hmong, and Latino communities. The goal is to address/dispel incorrect information by using trusted messengers. Part of the program, the city refers to as its joint information system to share timely and relevant information with the public during the trials. Interesting. You never thought the day would come when the government would be using social media influencers to pass on critical information like this, but there it is. 2021, everybody. All right, Rivian has tested its R1T electric truck in extremely cold weather. If Rivian's R1T is going to live up to its electric adventure truck image, it's going to have to survive conditions that could leave other EVs crying for mercy, and it might just manage that. So a lot of these testings are done in various parts of the world over frozen ice, lakes or whatever, and there are images of this truck being tried like that. So that's really cool. I'm really hyped about the EV world. I mean, recently I've been kind of invested emotionally with Tesla's success as well, because I don't think any other car maker delivers value to the extent that Tesla currently does. I mean, there are a lot of new people catching up with the groundbreaking work that Tesla has done in terms of electric vehicles. But I don't feel like anybody else is close enough. So the Model 3, I think in in Europe retails for, you know, after subsidies, like just 30,000 euros, which is just incredible value for money, I feel. So I really hope that EVs kind of take over. And it's hard for me to say this as a petrol head, but yeah, I really wish that electric vehicles succeed. You know, all the best to all organizations and companies that are dealing with technological breakthroughs in this regard. And all the best. Make EVs rule the world. All right, that's it from me. Take it easy. See you next time. Ciao.